Next up on the High Velocity Radio Show, I am delighted to introduce yet another person who's been with us before.
Two returning guests today.
Yeah, he's a keynote speaker, a celebrated author, a confidant to senior executives in a variety of Fortune 500, Fortune 1000 organizations. He has some recent research to share with us. Welcome back to the High Velocity Radio Show, Terry Barber.
Hey, Stone. Great to be back.
Oh, man, we are delighted to have you. Get us caught up, man. What have you been doing since we saw you last?
You know, I have continued to keep the eye out for all things that are inspiring in business. And I, in fact, have created a lot of wonderful kinds of new information that's available on my website that we'll talk about a little bit later on that is really all about the good things that are going on in the place of work that are truly inspiring.
Terry, do us a favor, and if you would take just a few minutes and walk us through the book that you wrote that you were discussing on your first appearance in High Velocity, just tell our audience a little bit about that.
Yeah. The book is called The Inspiration Factor, and it's really all about how business can take a hold of a very purposeful and intentional approach to going about inspiring their employees to be what I refer to as high-value advocates, HVAs. It's really not that difficult, but it does take some intentionality and some planning, and the book is all about basically seven principles that anybody can use, no matter your personality type, no matter your business model, no matter how big or small your team or your company is, that will absolutely positively inspire your employees to be those advocates. And what an incredible underutilized sales force that they really are. I think about in particular for those clients of mine who are these huge healthcare clinics, these huge healthcare systems that have literally thousands of employees out there in the community who have the ability to touch the lives of so many people if they just are inspired at work. It's easy.
Now, do you have a history of working with leaders that were less than inspiring, and was that a motivator for you, or did you have the benefit of working for some leaders that were particularly inspiring, and that got you fired up, or did it come from a little bit of both of that for you?
Stone, haven't we all worked for some real assholes somewhere in the past?
Yeah, you know? I guess so, yeah.
We've also co-hosted radio shows with some, too.
Yeah, that absolutely positively served as a driving motivation for wanting to create and write a book about how basically to inspire people rather than just continue to what I refer to as smoosh them. I actually have this talk that I do that's called The Mashable Manager, How to Raise Up Employees Without Smooshing Their Dreams. And it's all about how to basically utilize these principles. And my experience in the past is I remember having to work under a very high control kind of individual. And I don't care what personality you are. You don't like to be in that environment. People like to have some space where they feel like they've got latitude to make decisions, even if they fail.
Right.
So not to be able to do that really caused me a lot of heartburn. And I would come to work and I would be what I referred to, he managed by memo. So every day I'd walk into my inbox and there would be a list of all the things he was following up on me about. Made me a crazy person. There was nothing about fanning the fire within me in terms of the aspirations and the personal dreams I had. It was all about what he could get out of me.
So track one on your CD is don't be an asshole. Is that, and then from there, we build from there, right?
Yeah. And I, you know, quite frankly, I'm bold enough to say that because of Bob Sutton's ability to actually write a book by that name. So here we go.
Now, beyond concept and intriguing ideas, you've really done your due diligence and conducted some genuine research around this topic. And not so very long ago, get us caught up on a little bit of that.
Yeah, a couple things. One of the things that I learned from getting into this whole platform in and around inspiration at work is that nobody was measuring it. It was a good thing.
Felt good, sounded good, right?
Intuitively,
made for a good
just
keynote.
Knew that. Yeah, but the truth is people began to see that as somewhat fluff and it's not really urgent. So we created an inspiration index that actually helps an organization measure, quantify the level of inspiration that is fully developed at that point in time on the index, and they can benchmark that against other companies within their sector and look into the drivers of inspiration based on the research and find out where the gaps are between leadership culture and employee culture, and actually have a development program, a training program, a coaching program in and around raising the inspiration factor, working on those principles.
So what are, in your experience, some of these drivers for inspiration?
You know, I think one of the key drivers just happens to be being authentic and having a willingness from a boss's perspective that when they screw up, and we all do, to be able to say, I'm comfortable enough with myself to apologize and to take ownership of it and not to cast blame on my team. I think another driving principle has to do with the ability to uncover a great story in and around the business, whatever you refer to as a brand story, and pass that in on to and into the hearts and lives of your team so that they can take it and move it out. Another one, I won't go through them all, but the last one I'll mention is just creating an entire culture of inspiration so that process does not rule over people.
So what are some of the most effective ways to uncover and distribute an inspirational story? Because that strikes me as something that's not going to cost you hard dollars, and it strikes me as something that's going to have tremendous impact. How do you go about, in an organization of any real size and complexity, capturing the story and then turning around and redistributing it to the culture?
Well, I think everybody has a story. So every organization, I don't care what your product or what your service is, there's a story there. Here's the problem. Most people see their product as an end in itself. How many widgets do I need to sell? And really the question needs to be, what is the purpose of my product? How can I attach meaningful purpose that is beyond myself, that is beyond the scope of the organization, to my product and to my service? And in so doing, you can develop an entire story in and around that concept. Just find the purpose. And we have continued to find that when companies are willing to attach real meaningful purpose to what they do, sometimes it's about the greater good. Sometimes it's about tapping into the dreams of someone else. Sometimes it's about being a hero. I think about our latest research project on most inspiring companies, and I look at what some of these companies have done from that hero standpoint and say, what an incredible story. Nobody has illustrated that more than the Ford Motor Company building an entire brand story around not taking the TARP money.
Right.
Well, let's just think back to our previous guest, and we were having the conversation about the struggle of coming up with content. If your focus is selling a specific number of widgets in a certain amount of time, yeah, it's going to be hard to generate meaningful content. But when you're talking about the purpose, what the problems that widget's solving, how it's impacting the lives of the people who are getting that widget, boy, the content flows like water.
Yeah, in fact, it's not even necessarily just about what they do in their hands with the widget. Sometimes it's the outcome of the revenue or the profits in how that's handled. And I just look as an example. I read an article just this morning. Nordstrom is opening a brand new store in Manhattan under a different name, but it's a Nordstrom brand. And it's going to be totally 100% dedicated to using the profits for nonprofit good.
Oh, now that's cool.
Now, that has nothing to do with the product, per se. But it has a purpose now that's higher than just the organization itself. And we see this over and over again. When we read into the research from all the interviews, the hundreds of interviews we did in and around most inspiring companies, we saw this to be true with Southwest Airlines and Chick-fil-A in particular, those two, where people would write in all these incredibly inspiring things about these brands and never mention in Southwest Airlines, never mention one time anything about low fares or on-time kind of service, the two things that there is their promise. But people don't mention it. They look much more at the purpose behind it, the company, and their ability to make their employees feel so significant that it impacts their customer.
Now, how do you get these stories in these big organizations told and retold? Because I get the sense that just popping it in the e-newsletter is, or putting it in a little slip that comes in your paycheck probably doesn't get the job done. There's
got to
be more
terrible.
To it than that.
This is a terrible form of communication.
Okay.
I see that happen more than you can imagine. We'll just tweet it out and see how many people can pick it up. Hey, look, every great movement began with a group of collectively of a small group of people who bought into the vision, who learned the story, developed the story, and then they were able to pass the story on. And the key is finding those passionate kinds of people in and around the brand that you can pull together, make them an elite, exclusive kind of group. Maybe it's in a retreat setting. Maybe it's ongoing. But they have a special status, and they are the ones who are the keepers of the story. And it's not from management down. It's at a grassroots level across multiple layers of the organization where the story is then developed and deployed.
Now, let me ask you this. I'm making $3 million a year. I'm a senior level executive in a large organization. I've got keys to the executive washroom. I got access to the corporate jet. Everything seems pretty rosy to me. I get the sense that I might be a little bit anesthetized, a little bit insulated from what the real inspiration factor is in my organization. Do you find that some executives think they're inspiring, think they have this wonderful motivational culture, and they agree with you 100%, and they just say, but we just don't really need it, Terry. We're already there. I mean, after all, we're bumpity bump.
Yeah. All leaders assume they're inspiring. All leaders assume that they're inspiring. When I first began down this track, it was really interesting. I talked with people on a regular basis doing research just basically to find out, what do you think your own personal inspiration factor is at work? And without fail, they would rate themselves somewhere between 8 and 10. And they were being very genuine. But then
they really believed that.
But then on the backside, if you speak with their team, which I did in survey kind of form, there was always this huge disparity. I mean, there were many times when it wasn't just 1 and 2, it was like 0. And the guy or the lady had no clue that they were perceived this way. And when I revealed the results, they were devastated.
Well, let's get back to the research. You published your initial findings back in May, and what you really want to talk about today is some of the new insights you've gleaned since then. But give our audience a quick baseline on what you found and what you published in May.
Forbes was a great resource for being able to publish the results. And since then, well, let me give the background first. We actually asked America in a very broad-based kind of online survey, who are the most inspiring companies in America? And tell us why. So we just gave them basically a simple open-ended question and then asked them to backfill it with all kinds of qualitative types of data. So in so doing, we were able then to basically look through the data and begin to understand that out of that came not only who was most inspiring, which told a story in itself, and those results are published both in Forbes and on my website. You're welcome to see that. But what I thought was more interesting and more applicable are the kinds of things that these companies did that every single company has a chance to be able to learn from and to apply.
So there are some patterns, some similarities, some things that
Absolutely.
We can emulate from these organizations. And you speak to this idea of inspirational DNA. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, here's what we learned. And again, this is from the research. We found that there were basically four strands of inspirational DNA that came in and around these most inspiring companies. The first had to do with being a do-gooder, i.e. the story of Nordstrom's I was just telling you about. That is, they're making the world a better place. Microsoft and their entire culture is built in and around now what it is to raise up these social entrepreneurs to be able to utilize and capture and somehow take advantage of technology to make the world a better place. And then there are the whole notion of the DNA strand of being a dreamer. That is, not just leaving your thoughts out there in a lofty way. These are organizations who can actually, because of who they are, empower the consumer to feel like they can accomplish their dreams. And I reflect back on so many of the interviews we've read in and around Apple and what a powerful brand that we know that it is. And as brilliant as Steve Jobs is, I have to tell you, it's not his brilliance that inspires people. It wasn't just the fact that they're innovative that inspired people. What they told us, what inspired them, it made them feel, Apple makes them feel like they can accomplish their dreams. They can accomplish their goals. People wrote time and time and time again about how when they get involved and when they are around Apple, they feel entrepreneurial. They feel creative. They feel powerful. They feel like they're on the edge. That's the sign of an organization who can project in its dreaming kind of fashion. And everybody can do that in some fashion or another. The third strand had to do with being a hero. I referred to this from relative to Ford. These are organizations who are willing to make very tough ethical kinds of decisions in the face of potentially costing them revenue. Chick-fil-A closing on Sunday. Ford not taking TARP money. I could go on and on. There and again, it galvanized the following of Ford. And it galvanizes the following in distinctive in and around Chick-fil-A. Well, every single organization has a chance to make those kinds of difficult decisions every time they face a potential conflict when it comes to their ethics. And if they do so, message around it, help people to understand that you're going to stand by your convictions no matter what, and it inspires people to follow. And then the last one happens to be this whole thing about being a lover. And what I mean by that is simply these are companies who are so passionate about taking care and loving and caring for their employees that it shows up into their customer experience. Again, Southwest Airlines, whose very ticker is what? You know, it's love. And that becomes the essence of who they are, because consumers told us that it was, and again, this is not an employee survey, this was a consumer survey. Consumers told us they were inspired and moved by how well these employees were treated, and as a result, the care came out of them and expressed back to the customer.
Now, does an organization typically fall into one of these four strands of DNA? I mean, or do they sometimes manifest different styles?
Well, great question, because what we learned is that even though these are not exclusive one to another, there is always a strength. It's like having a specific paradigm or specific perspective from which you see everything that you do. And building in and around that particular strength, then you can bring the other strands into play, but you always play off of that strength because it's part of your identity.
Well, what I find inspiring beyond your passion around the topic is I get the sense that these traits really are transferable, that I can do it too. Not that I can only revere and admire it, but with some methodology, with some counsel, my company can do this too.
Absolutely. The principles that we opened up talking about at the beginning of the show are actually the drivers behind what makes these things work. So every company has a chance to implement any part of those principles and rally around one of the strands of this DNA to be an inspiring company.
Now, how does an organization hire around this? I mean, there's probably a way that an employer can look at a candidate for a position and determine if they have the right kind of DNA.
Oh, that's an interesting question. I thought about that.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, part of the service that we provide from the consulting point of view actually help create these hiring guides so that you begin to look through that kind of paradigm again, that profile again, to determine whether or not the people you're hiring are going to be on brand. Are they going to be potential advocates based upon who they are, their values, what it is that they're willing to learn to be a part of? And in the culture that we live in today, here's the truth. I don't care if the job market was totally upside down from where it is. We always need to be raising the bar. When we raise the bar and begin to demonstrate that we have a higher calling that we're going to bring people to, then we're going to get a better employee when it's said and done.
So if you know what to look for, you really can hire for inspiration.
Yes.
And if you know what to look for and have some counsel and some direction, you can genuinely craft and intentionally architect inspiration in your culture.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
I mean, to me, that's terrific news. That's got to be terrific news to a lot of leaders out there. So how can our listeners get in touch with you, learn more about this, and get the benefit of your expertise?
The easiest thing to do is go to my website at inspirationboulevard, BLVD.com, And I've got all my contact information in there. Lots of great resources. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on LinkedIn. You can find me on IM through Yahoo. I mean, just Google Terry Barber Inspires and you'll find me.